Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, back to the Jason and John Show. Jason Smith and John Martin on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Disappointing weekend for the University of Memphis. Now they are out of the top 25 after a loss on the road at SMU. Tom Luganbill is an analyst for that game. Catch him on SiriusXM. He joins us now. Tom, how you doing, man? Appreciate the time as always.
You bet, man. I'm doing well. I hope you guys are well too.
Yeah, everything in Memphis is good, all things considered. So it was a frustrating loss by Memphis. They get in such a hole to start the game before ultimately falling short there at the end. But just from a big picture sort of, you know, an aerial view, it feels hard and kind of difficult to fault them too much because they hadn't played in an entire month. So let's just sort of start there. When you haven't played in a month and you haven't been live tackling and you don't know who's going to be able to play, how can you be too hard on Ryan Silverfield right now?
I'm with you. Listen, outside of maybe the University of Houston, there's been no team in major college football that's had to go through what they have gone through. And then all of a sudden you get an opportunity to get back on the field, and it's against a team like SMU that's got three games under their belt. They you know, a pretty well-oiled machine. I actually thought Memphis hung in there well. I was very impressed with their conditioning. I think that was the thing that I would have been most concerned about if I'm Ryan Silverfield. I thought they rotated their kids in well. Their kids played hard. You know, when you lead up to, you know, just hearing all the background and the details, and I'm sure you guys are privy to all of that, you know, leading up to the games, just how limited the practice time was. And I'm not talking about practice with the entire team. That almost didn't exist. I'm talking about just getting position groups on the field once at a time, and then the next position group. And you don't have, to your point, live 11 on 11, 7 on 7, 9 on 7. And you're just trying to figure out, all right, how are we going to get our best 11 or 22 or 44 to the weekend? And to be honest with you, I think a lot of teams would have gone out there. They would have been dragging wind. They would have been really struggling. I did think that there were some procedure penalties and some stuff that was to be expected that happens when you, you know, haven't played in a while. And, you know, a team like SMU kind of irons that stuff out already. So I think there's a foundation to build on. I actually texted Coach Silverfield yesterday and just let them know that I was really impressed with what they put on the field, because there's no recipe for it. You could call any coach in America to try and get advice. Nobody's going to have any other answers than you do.
Yeah, Memphis gave up 348 yards in the first half, and the second half was just 200, and only 77 in the fourth quarter. It really allowed their offense to come back and have a chance to win that game. How much of that, Tom, did you see adjustments sort of knocking the rust off, and then how much of it you know, in fairness to SMU, was them losing Roberson?
Probably a combination of both. You know, that was the thing, and if you heard me on the broadcast, you know, to me, the whole difference in the ball game between the two teams was Memphis gave up explosive plays on defense, mm-hmm. and SMU did not. And so Roberson goes down, and all of a sudden you take away the deep threat, and there's really not that threat from SMU offensively. But I think the thing that, if you're a Memphis fan, if you're a member of that staff, and if you're a player in that locker room, it would have been very easy for that team to fold their tent and just say, hey, you know, woe is me. We haven't been able to practice. This is probably what we expected to happen.
Right.
Instead, they kept plugging away. They were playing hard, and their execution got better, and they started to develop confidence, and they were starting to you know, put drives together, and they kind of came out of the funk. And I think that's a sign of a team that's got a lot of leadership and a lot of pride.
It was not a great weekend as a whole, Tom, for the AAC. I mean, if you're talking about playoff, right? I mean, you're talking about getting a, you know, group of five, you know, access, whatever, to the New Year's Day, because UCF goes down to Tulsa. But I mean, we talk a lot about it all the time here on this show, sort of the perception of the AAC catching up nationally, because it is top to bottom, you know, a very good football conference. But do you think a weekend like this one, where, you know, a Memphis falls out of the top 25, UCF goes down to Tulsa, do you think that hurts the league nationally?
No, I really don't, because I still think you've got Cincinnati there. You've got good competition top to bottom. We don't know what Houston's going to put on the field if and when they get on the field. You know, everybody, I think as long as the Big 12 keeps screwing it up, then you're going to have a chance probably with a team out of the AAC. Now, you're going to have to run the table, and you're going to have to look good doing it. The good news is, you know, whether you're SMU, whether you're Cincinnati, you know, whoever it is, because of the lack of inventory with, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 not playing, a lot of these teams in the AAC and, you know, even nationwide, and BYU's another. BYU might be the best group of five team out there. And now all of a sudden you're seeing these teams midday, ESPN, ESPN2 windows where you would normally not be able to see them. So it gives committee members, it gives fans, it gives people more exposure to the brand of the conference to say, okay, well, that team looked really good. They ran the table. I can see why they would be in. Whereas otherwise, maybe other years, you're not seeing them enough to make that assessment.
What are we to make of Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma and where it's sitting right now, now outside the top 25?
Well, I think that the one thing that I keep pointing to, now listen, defensively, I don't understand why everybody's questioning what's going on. That's what the conference is.
Right.
It's what it is. It's what
always
it is top
been.
To bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it always has been. You don't have the front personnel in the trench play to be able to disrupt people and get them off schedule and create negative plays. That's why Oklahoma has never won a playoff game, because they play a team that can dominate them up front on both sides of the ball, and then it slows down all the other stuff. Secondly, people fail to realize that while Spencer Rattler might be a very talented kid, he's also a true freshman. And you look at those previous three quarterbacks that transferred into that program, they had all played meaningful snaps. They had all had an extensive amount of experience, so that when they arrived in Norman, they weren't right out of high school and haven't played in four games and then redshirted. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to see, guess what? Freshman quarterback's going to make some freshman mistakes, and he's going to throw the ball to the other team, and maybe he's going to be inaccurate. And now all of a sudden, you're not going to be a team that just goes up and down the field on people. And then defensively, you know, you guys thought Memphis gave up explosive plays. Oklahoma gave up explosive plays almost like, it was every other play. I mean, they couldn't tackle. It was on the ground. It was over the top. I mean, it was glaring. So, you know, now, you know, you see what Texas did. You see Baylor gets beat by West Virginia. Now everybody's looking to Oklahoma State. Well, Oklahoma State's going to do the same thing. Somebody at some point's going to get them. And the team in all of this that might be coming out looking like a rose in the Big 12 when it's all said and done is Kansas State.
Interesting. Yeah, we are, of course, talking to Tom Luginbill. Was an analyst for Memphis SMU over the weekend. Catch him on Sirius XM with Barrett Salee, as always. Tennessee is up to 14 in the top 25, and they got a big one. They got a big one this weekend. You know, you can talk about the win streak, you can talk about sort of everything Jeremy Pruitt has done, but this feels like, you know, the real test here for him. And he was asked this weekend, is Tennessee ready to challenge and contend with Georgia? He had a one-word answer. That answer was absolutely. You buying it?
Willing and able to compete? Absolutely. Are they good enough to beat them? I don't know if anybody knows the answer to that question yet. And listen, I had them early on last year. I actually had the double overtime loss to BYU at home in week two after they'd lost to Georgia State. And I don't know if the program's ever been in more of a position, and he's on the Arkansas. And somehow, some way, in that locker room, they resurrected things, got it pointed in the right direction. You get to the postseason, now you're excited in the offseason, and you've got this win streak. But I don't think anybody truly knows, maybe even including Tennessee, just how good they really are. But I know they're doing a couple of things that I think lend to winning football. Their third down conversion rate is outstanding. Their red zone offense has been outstanding. They haven't turned the ball over. They've been able to run the football. All of these ingredients, along with playing, you know, serviceable, pretty good defense, I think it gives them a chance. I don't think they're good enough to make mistakes and, you know, and beat a Georgia. I don't think that's a question. I think we know that Georgia, top to bottom, has a more further along talented roster. But I would expect them to play well. I don't think they'll go out and do what Auburn did. Like, I don't think they'll go out and look like they're inept on offense.
Is Florida the best team in the East, Tom?
Top to bottom, probably. You know, I think that, and listen, I think they're going to get better on defense as they go along. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's pointing to the defense, but that offense right now has so many weapons. You can make an argument. They got the best pound-for-pound player in college football in Kyle Pitts. I don't know how anybody's supposed to match up with him. And now, you know, Kyle Trask has gone from this guy that you're hoping you could be able to win some games with,
right,
that now you can win because of. And that's a whole – now you're dealing with a whole different set of confidence levels and chemistry within your football team. So I like Florida. I think they're pretty good. I think in time they're going to be just fine on defense over the course of the season. All of this, though, guys, and, you know, you're sitting there in Memphis, and I've broadcasted each of the last 4 weeks, and you talk to these coaching staffs. The teams that are going to be there in the end are the teams whose players are most responsible away from the building.
It's so true.
Because if you get hit with a COVID deal and the contact tracing that goes along with it, because that's the one thing a lot of people don't realize. It's not the positive test. It's the contact tracing. So if you have five guys in your tight end room that contact trace, but they all test negative, they get treated like the positive test. They go into quarantine too. And so you've got to be able to somehow get to Saturday, if you're Florida or if you're whoever it is, and be able to put your best team out there, and your kids have to be responsible when they're away from your building.
Yep. It is absolutely true, and you hope maybe there's another way, but certainly for the foreseeable future, that is the way, and I know coaches around the country are frustrated as hell having to wrestle with that. Kentucky is not the team that we probably thought they were, but that's still an impressive win for Lane Kiffin, is it not?
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I think that, you know, Kentucky has been their own worst enemy. They've had the self-inflicted wound. They played as good as Auburn did in that opener. They just made more errors than Auburn did. They turned the ball over. And then I think that Ole Miss, what we've seen now 2 weeks in a row, they're pretty good on offense. And I think we've
also
seen that Lane Kiffin is a really good football coach. You can say what you want, like him, dislike him. That guy's a good coach. And it's going to take a little while for them to get the caliber of player that you need to be able to compete in the West on defense, particularly up front. But as long as they're going to be in the 35-plus points per game, if they're capable of doing that, then they'll cause some problems.
Is it ever okay? I realize it's just Mike Leach's second game at Mississippi State. Ever okay to lose at home to Arkansas?
You mean the Arkansas team carrying a 20-game conference losing streak?
Man.
Here's the issue, guys. And if you look at the Pac-12, okay, and you look at what the University of Washington would do to them, is they would beat them up front, and then they'd drop 7 or 8, and they'd play zone, and they wouldn't give them man opportunities, and Washington would beat them every year. Yep. Now, here's my concern, and I've said this from the moment he was hired, because I think he is a really, really good football coach. But there's one thing that is going to be a problem, is the SEC is a line of scrimmage league. The Big 12 and the Pac-12 are perimeter skill leagues. All right.
Yes.
They don't have the type of people up front that can beat you up and get you off schedule. And if you can't run the ball, like against LSU, they ran the ball for 9 yards. They ran it for 87 against Arkansas. They don't have a tight end in their offense. If you're going to throw it 59, 60, 65 times a game, guess what? You're going to up your turnover opportunities.
Right.
It turned it over 7 times. So if you're going to get beat up and you're going to struggle to protect your quarterback because you're so one-dimensional, that's going to catch up with you eventually in a line of scrimmage league.
Tom, I've got to ask you, our old buddy Mike Norvell took a new job, and nobody certainly would blame him for that at Florida State. But in terms of just starts, I mean, this has to be one of the worst starts ever in the history of college football because he's got the stuff with COVID. He gets COVID.
Yep.
His players doubt the protocols. There's race stuff. They say he didn't do what he said he did. Then you're down at the half. You finally get the coach, and you're down at the half against Jacksonville State. Now, they won the game, and that should be said. But,
yep.
I mean, that's not particularly a forgiving fan base. So what would be your assessment of the Mike Norvell era so far at Florida State?
So far we've seen the end of the Jimbo Fisher era. We saw Willie Taggart. Now we've seen Mike Norvell. That's 3 different coaches, 3 different staffs, 3 different administrations. What's the common denominator amongst all 3? The players. They got a player problem. They might look good in their uniform, and they might have athletes. I don't think they got good football players, and I don't think they have a healthy locker room. And I say that having stood on the field and broadcasted three of Willie Taggart's games. There's just – I don't know how high their give-a-crap quotient is. Those kids just go out there, and this is my personal opinion. I said this on ACC Network last week. I said what Mike Norvell needs to do and what Florida State fans need to understand, it might take 2 to 3 years. He needs to house in that locker room and flip the script in terms of the personality and the mental and character makeup of their players, because the players are not performing to a standard. And if you saw Mike Norvell's comments, okay, off of the Miami game, and this is, I translated, but he goes, we're not seeing the emotional response you'd like to see out of our kids to play winning football. What that means to me is our kids don't care. Because if you're not seeing emotional response about getting your tail kicked and you're not upset and you don't have tears in that locker room, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Tom, man, this is great stuff.
Great stuff, Tom.
We appreciate your time as always.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep.
Pleasure.
He is Tom Luganville. Was there as an analyst for Memphis and SMU. I mean, I do think it's fair, obviously. I mean, they got a quarterback issue, and that's where you got to kind of start when you're talking about taking a job and rebuilding.
All right, so it takes time.
You got to give Mike a shot to get his guy in there, whoever that may be. I mean, did a good job of that here, Riley Ferguson, and then he went out and got Brady White. So he can do that, and I do think he has credibility in that arena. But, man, you got to hit
Jacksonville State's first game.
Yes.
Seed have been a lot hotter if he doesn't get that win. I mean, you got to, you know, you do get that turned around. But for a while there, it looked like they were about to lose that game. I'm not sure you get the 2 to 3 years.
You're down a touchdown at the half. I mean, that was just a mess. Now you win the game, and so I know they're not having a parade down in Tallahassee today, but Mike gets to stay
the
for another week.
The birds at least can chirp another week.
We'll revisit this on Monday next week, but I feel like it's week to week down there, man. I hope he gets to turn around, and I hope they give him the time.
I got Notre Dame next. Good luck.
Yeah, that's going to be ugly. You say, right, like you think he's going to get multiple years, but it's going to be a long season, man.
It is, and it's going to get uglier. Because after that, they got a top 10 UNC team, then they're at Louisville. I mean – you know, there's some opportunities, at least those first two, in particular Notre Dame and UNC, the opportunities to get embarrassed.
No question. So anyway, there you have it. Thanks to Tom Luganville for joining us on the show today. We'll come back. Jason and John, 99.9 FM, ESPN.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.